From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
We expect a level of cooperation from the Democrats to work with us to get these folks installed. And obviously, we're going to look at explore all options to make sure that they get moved and that they get moved quickly.
Welcome to Washington Watch, and thanks for tuning in. That was Senator John Thune of South Dakota, who was elected yesterday as the next GOP leader in the Senate. He was addressing a question on President Trump's call for recess appointments. We'll discuss it with Andy McCarthy, a senior fellow at National Review Institute and a former chief assistant U.S. attorney. One of the first orders of business will be government funding.
Government funding is scheduled to run out on December the 20th. Both sides must work together to prevent a shutdown before then. Nobody wants to hear the words Christmas time shutdown a few weeks from now. I can't think of something the American people would want less during the holidays.
That was a not-so-happy Democrat Senate leader, Chuck Schumer. We're going to be speaking with Congressman Blake Moore, the new vice chair of the House Republican Conference, about this and much more, what's to come in the lame duck session of Congress and the 119th Congress. Yesterday, we discussed with Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma how the Biden administration is refusing to contract with faith-based groups working to reduce recidivism in the federal prison system. Now, this may be due, in part, to a focus on advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. A newly released report from Open the Books reveals that within just the Department of Health and Human Services, that's just one department, the Biden administration has spent hundreds of millions of tax dollars advancing DEI, hiring hundreds of fellow federal workers to implement this agenda. John Hart, the CEO of Open the Books, will join us to discuss the details. And finally, Dr. Al Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, will join me to discuss this week's news and how Bible-believing Christians should approach government engagement in the days ahead. You know, one thing I often hear from people, they ask me, Tony, what can I do to help? Well, you know what my answer is? Pray, vote, stand. All right, we've voted. Now we need to continue to stand for biblical values, and we need to pray, especially now. Join us for Operation Prayer Shield as we ask God to protect our nation and Israel during this time of transition. We're also praying for the incoming administration that there will be godly men and women filling key roles. If you'd like to join with thousands of other believers in praying, text SHIELD to 67742. That's S-H-I-E-L-D, SHIELD to 67742. You'll receive weekly alerts, daily prayer points, and more. Again, text SHIELD to 67742. Republicans in the House of Representatives yesterday locked in their selections for their conference's leadership for the 119th Congress. House Speaker Mike Johnson won the GOP nomination to retain the gavel, doing so by a unanimous voice vote. Others on the House GOP leadership team will be my good friend, Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, also House Majority Whip Tom Emmer, and Conference Chair Lisa McClain, NRCC Chair Richard Hudson, and Conference Policy Chair Kevin Hearn, formerly of the Republican Study Committee, and Conference Vice Chair Blake Moore of Utah, and Conference Secretary Aaron Hochin of Indiana. So what might we expect to see in the House coming in January, and what can we expect in this lame duck session of Congress? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Blake Moore, who serves on the House Budget Committee and the Ways and Means Committee. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Utah. Congressman Moore, welcome to Washington Watch, and congratulations on your election as conference vice chair.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
That's the post that Mike had, Mike Johnson, before being elevated speaker.
Yeah, that's my team always reminds me. Hopefully, I don't have the same fate as him, and I can stay doing my job there, and he continues on in foreseeable. He's done an amazing job. He's been able to keep this conference moving in the right direction. We're really excited about the election results. Thanks for highlighting the leadership elections. But last week, and just seeing the mandate across the country that we want conservative leadership to move things in a different direction in our country.
Blake, there are some housekeeping things that have to be taken care of, obviously, to organize for the next Congress coming in. And that was taking place today. In part, there were conversations about the rules, and there'll be a rule package voted on in January. I was talking with the majority leader earlier today. Give us a sense of the mood inside there as members are talking.
We just had a unanimous vote, unanimous voice vote for our speaker. A lot of still hard questions for him to make sure we're still moving in the direction that we want to go. Today's rules package will be a lot of debate, and we'll ultimately put it to a vote, and we'll see, you know, kind of where things land. But this process that we did 2 years ago, I remember former Speaker McCarthy, he did a masterful job of getting the conference together. We have disagreements on how we think some of these procedures should go, and we're going to debate it out and move on to the next piece. And then, you know, then we have the rest of the lame duck and getting then a speaker elected and moving forward.
Also yesterday, President-elect Trump came and visited with you and spoke to the Republican conference. What can you tell us about that gathering?
Yeah, I guess maybe his title could actually be officially President-elect President Trump. He is still a President Trump because he's been a I've never thought of that. He had a great message. It was just like, look, we had a big, strong win across the country. Work together. Let's get the agenda moving in the right direction. And it was neat to see Elon Musk. He's a larger than life. And you know, this is what we've needed, right? We weren't in President Trump's first term. We created one of the strongest economic engines, which is what the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was. Congressional Republicans had been working on that for a decade. President Trump came. It was the right moment. We had the House, the White House, and Senate. And we moved on it, and our country had a strong economic growth period, and we're still benefiting from that bill. Next year, and this candidly should have been the only thing that was discussed on the campaign trail for the last year, could have been, we have a tax bill that expires next year, and we need to make sure that we're moving forward. So he was talking a mixture of policy and galvanizing all the new voters that we have in our party and moving this to, you know, what we want to accomplish. And it's going to be a neat time. Senate, the House of Representatives, we are a separate body than the executive branch. We have a separation of power. But when we align on policy, there's no telling, you know, what we can accomplish. And I think there's a lot that we can do that with a new administration.
Well, and Congressman, you got to be very much aligned even with one another, as it looks like top number, the House, the Republicans could come in with 221 seats, maybe at the top.
One of my closest friends is on the fringe of that. I'm still going to say 222 and manifest that this continues to happen.
Well,
but yeah, it'll be very tight.
That will be great if that happens. But we already have seen the president kind of plucking some members out. We have Elise Stefanik, who will be at the United Nations. We have Mike Waltz, who will be in the White House. And then yesterday, we've already had the resignation of Matt Gaetz, as he's been tapped for attorney general. So you're not going to have much of a margin to work with.
No. You can see the trepidation on Speaker Johnson's face when he's like, we have a lot of great people over here, President. Please don't take any more right now. So, yeah, we'll have to get some of these special elections done as soon as possible. And we're not going to be haphazard or irresponsible with this really tight window to navigate. Elise Stefanik needs to be over in that position. So I'm thrilled, and that was a very sensational. And Mike Waltz, like, couldn't be a better national security advisor. His is different because he does not need Senate approval. So we can try to make sure that we stay in the majority. They'll be very tight, and you know, sicknesses or illnesses or people missing votes, we gotta recognize
right. That.
So
yeah, I mean,
we'll be responsible with it.
You've been dealing with that for the last year, and so going into a very aggressive agenda. Let's talk a little bit about that agenda. You mentioned this. I think top of order is going to be the tax package. Is that going to be one of the first that the House tackles?
So legislatively, think of what we did last term. Our HR 1 was about energy, and unleashing American potential. Our HR 2 was about border security and making sure that we secure our border to be able to safeguard our nation and our homeland. And then that's the only time you have a chance to then embrace a broader immigration reform that also needs to take place. But we've got to secure the border. So those will be things that those are legislative items that we've already done. We want to get those redone as soon as possible, but President Trump can also take some action on the executive front to undo some of the harmful policies that President Biden put in place. So that'll be like first order. Then you have a very, very important tax reform bill, extension of what we had done in 2017, making permanent where we can. That will be a very, very tough bill to get done, and it's going to take us some time, but we're going to be primarily working on that. That's my role on Ways and Means Committee, and you can see just a clear need. If we don't get this done, it will be a $4.3 trillion tax increase on American workers and families, and we, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, we're committed to not let that happen. So that will be first major legislative priority that we haven't already done in this term.
Right.
We didn't have a Senate. Chuck Schumer, we gave him some really strong legislation. He didn't even take it up. He didn't even try to, like, you know, take a few pieces from it, maybe try to work on that and say, like, okay, we can agree on this part of this bill. Let's at least try to. He didn't do any of that. He just was dead on arrival. He's not serious about governing. He's not serious about actually creating the things that ultimately led to a big loss for Democrats. They didn't respect people's voice on the border. They created $5 trillion net new dollars of spending that created inflation. And we've got the solutions for that. And now we've got a Senate that can actually move on some of the good legislation we've done in the House.
So, Congressman Moore, just so our folks, viewers and listeners know, when legislation passes the House and you go into a new Congress, you have to redo it. But this Correct. Is ground you've already plowed, so it shouldn't be that difficult to get the energy bill through, to get the border bill through, because you've debated it, you've looked at it, you've vetted it, and it's just a matter of pushing it back through again and now having a Senate that will work with you.
The key on this piece with the Senate is this bill would still have to pass with bipartisan support, but it's not Chuck Schumer that gets to drive it and leverage it. It would be John Thune, and he is going to do the yeoman's work of making sure people, we're going to send him a bill, and he's going to go get it done and find a way to get it over the finish line and send it back to us. It won't be the exact same bill, but it'll be a significant improvement in the process to have someone like him over a Senator Schumer that
right.
is not
just
serious about
it.
Doing this important work.
Just less than a minute left, Congressman Moore. What do we expect to see in the next few weeks in this lame duck session?
Right. So we've got a lot of really good bipartisan legislation that we did on defense, health care, and then the appropriations bills. So I can't predict what we'll get taken up necessarily. You're going to have an administration that is calculus has completely changed. President Biden, to what extent he's wanting to get something accomplished before Democrats lose the Senate and the White House, he might be motivated to do some of these good bills that we've actually built up and we've got done. So I hope we can get a health care bill passed. There's some tax fixes that we have to do. You need an end of year sort of bill to get that done. Appropriations. That's going to be a tricky one that I don't exactly have the read on how we're going to play that. But we want to find as many savings as possible. But also, we don't want to burden President Trump with all of this by, you know, handing it to him on his desk on day one. Let's get done what we can and get it off the plate so he can focus on all the key things that we need to focus on.
Well, looks like you guys are going to be busy for a while. Congressman
and
Blake Moore.
And we welcome it. We hate sometimes the opposition when Senator Schumer wouldn't take up any of our stuff. We want to be busy.
Now
we
you've got a clear path forward. Congressman, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Folks, stick with us. We're back with more after this.
Let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
The American Republic has a freedom like no other. It has roots in the scriptures far more than any other heritage. And if we as followers of Jesus and conservatives don't defend it, who will?
New neutrality is not an option. There are many Christians who believe that if we just keep our heads down, if we just don't say the wrong thing, that somehow we will come out of this unscathed. You're naive if you think that, because what they want from us is not our silence. What they want from us is our submission.
Part of the dilemma of Christianity in our generation is that we've relied a little too much on human wisdom and human reasoning, human strength, human resource, and we've relied too little on the power of God and God's ability to open doors that we can't open and do things that we couldn't even hope to begin to do.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know always that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
The new Stand Firm app for Apple and Android phones today and join a wonderful community of fellow believers. We've created a special place for you to access news from a biblical perspective, read and listen to daily devotionals, pray for current events, and more. Share the Stand Firm app with your friends, family, and church members, and stand firm everywhere you go.
Are you a Christian parent looking to raise a spiritual champion in today's culture? Renowned author George Barna has written a new book, Raising Spiritual Champions. This book offers valuable insights based on extensive research conducted by George Barna, the Family Research Council, and Arizona Christian University. Learn how to help your children discern biblical truth and find compelling meaning and purpose. Don't miss out on this essential resource for parents. Order your copy today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Join us for Operation Prayer Shield. Text SHIELD to 67742 and join with thousands of others, believers across the country, praying for our country right now. We're in a very, very dangerous time. We've been talking about this on the program as we're kind of in a vacuum of leadership, our allies like Israel. We need to be praying for God's shield of protection. So text the word SHIELD to 67742. All right. Always love to pull back the curtain on government to see, you know, just how crazy the left is. Well, earlier this week, the nonprofit Government Watchdog Group, Open the Books, released a new report exposing the expansive extent of the Biden-Harris administration's whole of government DEI effort just at the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, this goes all across the government, but they did a deep dive at the Department of Health and Human Services. The magnitude and cost of the administration's woke agenda is staggering, just in this one department. So how has this administration been putting our tax dollars to work? Well, here to break it all down is John Hart, CEO of Open the Books. John, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Tony.
So let's start with what prompted you to look into the Department of Health and Human Services to see just how deeply rooted this agenda of DEI was.
Well, Tony, as you know, this is a problem all over the federal bureaucracy. We're in an age where we've really lost our foundational understanding of this question of identity. You know, the founders wrote the Declaration of Independence that our rights are endowed to us by a creator. They're not dependent on the king, the state, our race, our ethnicity. And we've moved so far away from that, we're really institutionalizing another form of discrimination through this woke DEI framework. And it's a hyper-racial sensitivity that actually makes people less sensitive towards other people of different races. I think it's really a racist ideology in many respects. So what we found at HHS is that there are 294 employees just at HHS focused on advancing this DEI agenda. $40 million.
That's their sole focus is 294 employees,
right,
just to advance DEI.
Right. Right. Again, this hyper-racial focus that has nothing to do with health. And when you step back and think about, you know, it's worth looking at. I'm glad, you know, Elon Musk and Vivek and President Trump are working together with this Department of Government Efficiency, because we need to look at every agency at every level and ask, are these programs advancing the central mission of the agency? And does the agency's mission even make sense? And so HHS really ought to be focused on things like improving health outcomes. There's a research component, and it's worth asking is, are the dollars we're spending on DEI employees doing anything to help healthcare make healthcare more affordable or accessible or transparent to low-income Americans? And I think the answer to that's probably no. It doesn't advance that primary focus.
But John, that's not all that you found. I mean, you also found that over at HHS there are employees that are focused just on the health equity.
That's right.
And that's another $30 million a year just in the salaries alone. I mean, what is health equity? Don't we want everyone to have health?
Of course, yeah. Well, again, it's $30 million on health equity. And again, it gets to this really just kind of perversion of what the founders' vision of identity is that our identity doesn't come from our race. It comes from natural law or nature's God. That's what America was built on, this concept. And so when you add on these other identities and these sort of equity concepts, you're not actually advancing people's human dignity. And you know, the way I think of it is, there's every human being has worth and dignity by being a child of God. So there's right. There are no amount of acronyms, of plus symbols, of letters you can add to a human being that gives them more dignity. And so, in fact, every acronym could be a subtraction, because it takes us away from the value that we all have as children of God.
Well,
and that ideology is just so pervasive throughout the federal government.
It also takes us away from even our nation's motto of out of the many one, that bringing, we're separating, dividing America through these identity politics. And I think this last election shows us that a majority of Americans want to move away from this.
That's right, and that's a fundamental teaching that Jesus, you know, in Christ there's no Jew or Gentile, and we're making our culture so hyper focused on that, as Thomas Sowell observed, is that racism isn't dead; it's on life support, but it's being kept alive by ideologies like DEI.
It's a useful tool for those on the left to keep people divided and keep Americans apart. Let's talk just a few moments. We got a couple minutes left. What type of salaries are we talking about for these DEI hires? I mean, are these like low level $30,000, $40,000 a year?
No, I mean, there were 182 of these workers made at least six figures. One collected $221,000. So again, we're not talking about low level employees. We're talking about very, very well paid, well compensated people where your tax dollars are going to fund this ideology. And again, back to the point I made at the beginning, Tony, is that we live in a world of finite resources. You know, families have to make hard decisions every day when they sit down and make a choice between healthcare, groceries, sending your kid to college, donating to a charity or your church. And every dollar we spend or the government takes from us to spend on things like DEI is a dollar that we can't spend on something that's more productive.
Right. That actually turns over in the economy as well. It has a multiplying effect.
Exactly.
When it's spent in the private sector. We just got about a minute left, John. What was the most outrageous of the DEI spending choices that our government made that you uncovered?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably one of the more outrageous things is that there was an event where they had Ibram Kendi, who's a very well-known kind of DEI ideologue. He wrote the book How to Be an Anti-Racist.
Right.
And NIH used federal money to do an event with him, and they tried to scrub it from their site. And we went back and filed Freedom of Information Act requests to get to the bottom of that. And that just illustrates sort of the brazen nature of this, is that, you know, we live in a free society, Tony, that I think you and I would agree that let's have an open debate on all these ideas. Let people argue it out in the marketplace. But we don't need to be spending federal funds advancing one ideology over another, particularly when, again, all the money we spend on this Ibram Kendi seminar is a dollar that it can't be used to fight cancer, can't be used to go after heart disease and all the other things that are just common sense priorities of
which goes back to what you said earlier, the core mission of the agency, which is what our government should be doing. John Hart, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk with you today.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, Andy McCarthy joins us to talk about the proposal for recess appointments in the next administration. Don't go away.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Again, let me invite you to join us for Prayer Shield, praying for our nation, praying for the incoming administration, praying that we've got good leaders leading us forward. Text the word SHIELD to 67742. That's SHIELD to 67742 to join with thousands of others praying for our country. It's a very, very dangerous time. All right, ahead of yesterday's Senate leadership elections, President-elect Donald Trump stated on social media that any Republican seeking the position a party leader must agree to recess appointments. That's an alternative method of appointing officials that can be found in Article 2, Section 2, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution. Now, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate. Recess appointments, usually when you can't get your nominations through, and with the rules change, it just requires 50 plus one, unless I'm missing something. And so I wanted to bring an expert on to talk about this and explain what's being proposed. And that expert is Andy McCarthy, senior fellow at National Review Institute and former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. He joins us by phone. Andy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
So, Andy, help me understand this because, I know the rules have been changed in the Senate so where nominations could get through at 50, 51. And so that used to, the recess appointment is used when they're being blocked. If you've got the majority party and you've got all those votes, you would think that you could get it through with your party support. Am I missing something?
No, you're missing nothing, Tony. The only reason to do this would be to try to carve a path for somebody who was not qualified for the job. Obviously, anyone who President Trump wants who is qualified for the job is going to get support. I think not only support from all of the Republicans, and of course, let's remember J.D. Vance will be the vice president, so he'll be there to break any ties, but I don't think that would even be necessary. But he'd probably get support from somewhere between 5 and 15 Democrats, depending on who the nominee is. So there's no problem getting qualified nominees through, and there's no good reason to scheme for a way to get out from under the Constitution's requirement of Senate vetting before a nominee can be approved to take a high-level position.
Okay, so what exactly is being proposed in terms of what the president has, president-elect has suggested with a recess appointment? Walk us through how that works.
Well, so far, I don't want to get us too far ahead of anything, because I'm not accusing the administration of having done anything underhanded at this point. I think that President Trump is—he's simply making a bad judgment if he thinks that he needs recess appointments. But what the idea that has been floated by some is that there's a provision in the Constitution that basically says if the House and Senate can't agree on when they're going to be, when Congress is going to be in session, that the president can direct them to be in session at a particular time, and that provision, which has never been used before for this purpose, would be exploited to allow President Trump to manufacture a disagreement between the two chambers about when they'd sit. He would then direct that there be a 10-day recess, and during that period of time, he would try to get through any recess appointments that he'd want to get. I don't think that's going to work. I sure hope they don't do something like this. Constitutionally speaking, I don't believe the president can direct the Senate not to be in session. So they have ways of convening that where they do a little bit of business for a few minutes at the beginning of a day, which shows that they're in
session.
And
they've been doing that. Going back to Obama, that's been the way they've been doing things. So would it be a stretch for me to say, Andy, that this would result in a lot of litigation?
It sure would, and it would be very bad for the country because, you know, let's take any important position in the government. If the appointment, Tony, was invalid, that means any action taken by that official, and some of these actions could be very consequential, would be subject to challenge in lawsuits. So, you know, the head of a big executive agency who makes, you know, any number of decisions per day, you could get a bunch of lawsuits challenging the validity of those decisions because the person was not properly appointed.
And that's a mess. That would be a mess.
Sure is. Sure would be.
I mean, I have to say, you know, I've been pretty impressed with the appointments that the president has made up until this announcement. Yesterday, it came out around the same time as the suggestion of Matt Gaetz as the attorney general. And there was kind of some eye rolling in the Senate. And I wonder if it's connected to that.
I certainly think that if the president anticipated that he was going to make some appointments, at least one, maybe others, that were going to be very controversial, that somebody in the transition camp has to be thinking about, well, how are we going to get those people confirmed? But, you know, to your point, given how easy it should be for the president to under the current rules, to get a good nominee or even a passable nominee confirmed, I think they would be better spending their energy on other stuff.
Andy, 30 seconds left, but we've found in the past that when you change the rules, they never go back. And so what we have to do is not just change them for today, but look at the effect they'll have 10 years down the road. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. And on that score, I would just point out Justice Scalia writing about recess appointments probably 10 years ago said that this particular provision is an anachronism that we don't even need anymore. So to change the rules to accommodate something we don't even need anymore is not prudent.
Yeah. We got to protect the rules. I mean, it's how our system works. Andy, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Andy McCarthy. All right, don't go anywhere. Dr. Al Mohler joins me next for a conversation on how the church should be engaging going forward. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. Behind me is one of the most recognizable buildings in all the world. The U.S. Capitol. What does it stand for? Well, most people say government. But you know the Bible talks about four institutions of government? You know what they are? And do we have a republic or a democracy? Well, what do you say? Also, what about this thing, separation of church and state? Does that mean Christians shouldn't be involved in government? Guess what? We address those issues and more in our new God and Government course. I invite you to join us to see what the historical record and the Bible has to say about government. Join us for God and Government.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these SageCons yourself, go to frc.org/SageCon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/SageCon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. Again, I invite you to join us for Prayer Shield, praying for our nation, praying for Israel, praying for the incoming administration, praying for the leaders in Congress during this lame duck session of Congress. There's a lot to pray for. You know, I say pray, vote, stand. We voted. We got to continue to stand for biblical truth, but we need to pray. And we need to pray for those in authority. Scripture tells us to do that. But we're going to help you between now and January the 20th with focused prayer through Operation Prayer Shield. So simply text the word SHIELD to 67742. That's SHIELD to 67742. And join thousands of other Christians across this country praying right now. Our word for today comes from Hosea chapter 4. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. Swearing and lying, killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break all restraint with bloodshed upon bloodshed. Here is God bringing a charge against them, an indictment. No truth or mercy, no knowledge of God, corruption of speech, deceit, murder, theft, sexual immorality. But then you look at verse 6 and you see where the root cause is. It is this: my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will reject you from being priest for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. You see, rejecting the word of God, the law, there was no mercy for the vulnerable and defenseless. Can there truly be justice and mercy, which we have many clamoring for today, without truth? No, it's not possible. We must have truth as the foundation of our republic. For more about our journey through the Bible, text the word Bible to 67742. All right, well, since the election, there has been a lot of activity. Every day, we're seeing news here in our nation's capital. We have appointments. The president's nominating individuals for cabinet positions. We've got the new Congress selecting their leaders. We have, as we were talking about earlier, I think we're going to find a lot more of what this previous or the present administration has been doing, like the DEI and all of their woke policies and the millions of dollars that have been spent on that. We're going to see more and more of that. I actually think that was at the center of this election, two contrasting worldviews. So, what does that mean going forward? How should we as Christians continue to engage in a way that honors God, that is in concert with the teaching of Scripture? Well, joining me now to talk about this is Dr. Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and the host of two podcasts, The Briefing and Thinking in Public. He also serves as the editor of World Opinions. Dr. Mohler, welcome back to Washington Watch. It's always great to see you.
Tony, it's great to see you, and wow, was there a lot going on.
Every day. There's plenty. Not an absence of anything to talk about, but I first, before we dive into some of the specifics, I want to get your thoughts on the election and this season that we're in as a country.
Well, you know, it's an overwhelming statement by the American people, and I think, quite frankly, just absolutely astounding the political class. The fact that Donald Trump won not only in the Electoral College clearly, but won the popular vote. The fact that Republicans gained control of the Senate and will hold control of the House. This is an unprecedented opportunity. And I just have to, with you, pray that our elected leaders will be good stewards of this opportunity. Because I'm not sure when in our lifetimes we may see this again. And so there's just a lot invested in this moment. And obviously, it's going to be a thrill a minute when you think about what's at stake with the new administration coming in. Frankly, the appointees to the president's cabinet and beyond. Big legislative initiatives. We got a lot on the table.
And I don't think the urgency of the moment is lost on President-elect Trump. As he has been, rolling out these nominations, which most of them have been pretty good. I've been impressed with a lot of them, especially our friend Mike Huckabee as the ambassador to Israel, first evangelical Christian to serve in that role. That's exciting to me, given the times in which we're living. But the president wants to get these nominations through, and just yesterday made a statement that he's looking to possibly use a recess appointment. And I was talking about this earlier in the program with Andy McCarthy, that he's got, you know, possibly 53 senators and Republicans, that is. He only needs 51 to get something through. So the recess appointment shouldn't be needed if you get the right people. But let's talk about the rules going forward and the urgency in balancing the two. How should we be looking at that?
Well, you know, Tony, like you, I'm a Christian conservative, and both of those words are absolutely crucial. Christian comes first, conservative comes second. But to be a conservative, especially in our context, is to believe that there is invaluable wisdom in our constitutional order. And that when you look at the power of a president to appoint a cabinet, that's absolutely clear. But it's also absolutely clear that the Senate has the responsibility of advice and consent. And you know, it's very easy for those who are very happy with the Trump election and count me very, very happy that the Republican ticket won. You look at this, you have some people who say, well, let's just cut the fast track. And you know, sometimes in a political exigency, that would turn out to be important. And you basically pointed this out. For instance, if he had an opposing party majority in the Senate, he doesn't. He has his own party's majority in the Senate. And honestly, I think our constitutional order needs to be honored. And so in the main, with very few exceptions, we need to go through the normal confirmation process. And by the way, you know, this president is president-elect, former president. It's an unusual time to say all that about one man.
Yes.
But, you know, he is not hesitant to say in advance that he intends to disrupt the rules. You need to save the exception as an exception, and because the president may need that exception at some point. And I think we'd all see it when that comes.
As a Christian conservative, as a constitutionalist, as one who's held office and had to work in the minority, the rules are important. I mean, think about this a minute. I'm not a huge sports fan. I used to be, but I'm not that much anymore. But can you imagine a football game with no rules? I mean, it just wouldn't work. I mean,
I think that's called the seventh grade.
well, actually, sometimes you wonder. Yeah, it is. The rules play an important function because, and as I've been in this arena for 35 years, and I've lost more battles than I've won when it comes to legislative policy ideas. But I knew that there would be tomorrow, and I would have to work harder. I would have to build a coalition and move this through. If you blow up the rules or you bend the rules, then you really bring antagonism, anger, and it not only disrupts the system, but it could destroy the system.
Well, and as you know, as you reap, so shall you. As you sow, so shall you reap.
Right.
And so, just imagine the alternative. I just want Christians to think about this. Let's suppose there were a Kamala Harris administration, and that administration moved towards recess appointments. We ended up with AOC and worse on a cabinet. With absolutely no break from the Senate. We don't want that. Let's remind ourselves of that.
And that's a really, really good point because back during, I'm trying to think, I've been here so long, I'm trying to remember what administration this was. There was, may have been, I don't think it was the Trump administration, before that, may have been all the way back to the Bush administration, where they just wanted to eliminate the, and it's been discussed now by the Democrats, that was the filibuster so that they could get things through.
That's right.
And a lot of conservatives were for that because in the short term it would have helped advance judicial nominees and different things that they were working on at the time. Of course, those rules have been changed on nominees. But I said, no, because just think what happens if those rules are changed in 4 years, who's going to be in control? And we would have Equality Act. We would have abortion on demand until birth as the law of the entire country. So you've got to think through the long term. As you said, when you change the rules now, the same rules are going to apply in the future.
And I believe this is part of the founders' vision. When you look at the Senate, often referred to just in history as the cooling saucer. So the House, more popular, votes fast and can get things done in a different way. The Senate tends to be, a slower operation by constitutional intention. And, once the political system in the United States coalesced around two parties, the filibuster is actually a continuation of that constitutional logic, I would argue. And as you say, the problem is if you get rid of it, then as a country, we're going to go back and forth between conservative and liberal administrations as if we have two completely different governments.
Well, and we are kind of doing that right now. And I think the Senate is kind of one of the anchors. But, one of the first changes was the 17th Amendment that allowed for direct election of the senators. Prior to then, they were selected by the legislature, which was a kind of a firewall from, public pressure, direct election. And I know that's almost, that's almost hate speech in the ears of some today to say, that public pressure, but it was to allow things to settle so that we didn't have this radical change back and forth from government. It was somewhat of an insulation, but it's like a ping pong match now, where we go from one to the other with each incoming administration, and that really changes how the world can view America. They really can't trust where we're going to be.
Absolutely. And, just in practical terms, as we tie this to moral principle, it's one thing if the president gets to the position where he can't get his appointees through and has to do something extraordinary. But with that Republican majority in the Senate, we should seek to go through the normal process, if nothing else, to show the other party how it's actually done right.
Right. I mean, even though it will be harder, may take longer.
Right.
It is a restoration of those founding principles that keeps a republic. Now, I would argue that the left has been moving us in this direction toward a democracy. They use the term democracy.
Absolutely.
These are policies that are in keeping with a democracy, which means you have people directly involved. And there's a big difference between a republic and a democracy.
Absolutely. And, our constitutional republic was put together with a logic that is based on the Christian worldview to avoid the concentration of power because that will lead to the concentration of sin. And so thus we have not one, autocratic leader. We have three branches of government. They all have to work in a certain symmetry. And I think we also need to understand that there's a the left, as you say, you said it exactly right. They want direct democracy. That means they hate the Electoral College. It means they also hate the Senate.
Right.
You know, you'll hear liberals say, look, it's not fair. California's got 40 plus million people. You have Wyoming, a fraction of that population. They both have two U.S. senators. Well, you know, that's a part of the greatness of our constitutional logic. Otherwise, Wyoming disappears as a political reality.
Well, and the republic. I mean, we are going on Absolutely. Nearly 250 years of this great experiment, and it's because of the wisdom, I believe, inspired wisdom of the founders in the structure Yes. that they put in place. So, Dr. Mueller, we just have a few minutes left. You know, Yeah. how, as Christians, should we be approaching this moment in time where, like you said, you're excited, I'm elated with what we saw last week in terms of what the American people did and the potential Right. we have going forward, but how do we seize this moment?
Well, that's a great question. I think there's a temptation on the part of even the Christians who did vote, and thankfully that I honestly believe the vast majority of church-going evangelical Christians did vote. And I think that the temptation now is to kind of sit back and say, well, we did our part. Well, that's not where this ends. We need political momentum because of our Christian convictions, and that means staying up on these issues, putting pressure where we need to put pressure, and quite frankly, continuing to articulate the convictions that bring us into this in the first place. And so, you know, there's a temptation on the part of the American people, particularly on the part of the winning party, to step back and say, well, that job's done. But as you know, majorities are lost as fast as they are won.
Yeah. Vigilance, eternal vigilance. Vigilance is necessary to stay involved. But also, we have to be measuring both parties according to the same Right. standard of truth. And there's a way to be, you know, when our side, if you say, well, you know, we've got to say, I'm a Republican, all right, I'm a conservative. And that's almost, I don't know that I've ever voted for a Democrat, maybe once or twice in Louisiana back when they had the old Democrats.
Right.
But we need to hold both parties accountable to the same standard. We Right. can't hold one to a standard and say, well, that's our guys. They're just trying to get down the road. Yeah. We have to return to a foundation of moral truth, because this conservatism Amen. Unanchored to morality and truth ultimately gets us to the same place as the path of the progressives.
You know, Tony, I think about this often. I've been at this for nearly 40 years, and you too. And that means that our words are recorded going back for decades. And I feel that it is a matter of character that my argument must be consistent in a straight line, regardless of which party is in power in the White House or in Congress. I have to make my arguments in a straight line. And so that means that we can't now all of a sudden change our tune on the linkage between character and conviction. We can't all of a sudden change our tune about how we read the Constitution and the separation of powers. We've got to maintain, for Christian character's sake, also for constitutional consistency's sake, we've got to maintain a straight argument. We have to hold our side even more accountable to those principles than the other side, which is why, by the way, we're on this side.
That's right. That's right. Because this is the side that values truth, recognizes that truth, and wants to conserve it, protect it, and restore it. Dr. Al Mueller, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for taking time to join me today.
Always good to be with you, Tony. God bless you.
All right. Dr. Al Mueller. Pray, vote, stand. And as Dr. Mueller said, our responsibility is not over when the election ceases and the votes are counted. And even though they're still being counted in some places, we have to continue to be involved. And you can help by praying right now. Pray. Join with Operation Prayer Shield. We've already seen the effects of this as the president is picking some really good people for his cabinet. So we have some prayer points for you. We'll be sending them out each day. Text the word SHIELD to 67742. That's SHIELD to 67742, and join with thousands of others in praying at this moment. That's all the time we have today, folks. Thanks for being with us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.